You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Want to start out with a huge thank you to my team here on the show, Cal on the board, Jamie, my senior producer, for getting the show out yesterday. And a big, big thank you to my colleague in broadcasting, Pat Kreitlow, who did double duty yesterday, rocking out at least 4 hours of radio and certainly giving a great amount of justice and having some great conversations, great discussions with our guests yesterday, including Bobby Coogan for the Center for American Progress, talking about the robbery that will happen out of your pocketbook if the Trump tax cuts 2.0 for billionaires and the world's richest corporations goes through. If you missed that or any of the fine program yesterday, including a discussion about what can only be called a charming little film called Hundreds of Beavers, Pat interviewed the producer of Hundreds of Beavers, a guy by the name of Kurt Ravenswood, yesterday. That is all part of our fabulous show archive. You can find all of the past Maggie Dawn shows on Apple Pods, Spotify, and of course by going to civicmedia.us/shows. But all of this to say thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who made it possible. For those of you who have listened to the show for more than a few times, you may have heard me regale you all at times about stories from my days long past of rugby playing and other athletic endeavors. Every once in a while, those athletic endeavors catch up with me and I have, you know, weird back spasms / muscle problems and end up on my bathroom floor in a fetal-like position, writhing from pain. That was me yesterday. We're going to hope we've got a pain-free show for me and for each and every one of you, along with some politics and fun this afternoon. We got just the guy to kick us off this afternoon. I'm joined by my colleague at Civic Media, Gray Gunderson, coming to you live from Park Falls, Wisconsin. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in your neck of the woods, Gray. Thanks so much for joining us again today.
Thanks for having me back, Maggie. I miss being here, and there's been a lot since last time we spoke. So it's, yeah, like you said earlier, we've got plenty to talk about as long as we just, whatever we decide to. I just wanted to quickly mention, I heard you said that your experience with sports was diverse, and this tiny little piece of my mind just asked, was it equitable? Was it inclusive? It's probably illegal then. Sorry.
These days it would be illegal. I will say this about the sport of rugby, in that it is an incredibly inclusive sport without ever having to, like, the intentionality behind that. And here's why rugby is incredibly inclusive, just to riff on this random topic for a moment. Rugby players, if you have never seen a match, I highly recommend YouTubing one and checking it out. But if you've ever seen a match, look at the diversity of athletes on that field, both in terms of what their magic superpower as an athlete is, as well as like body types, height, what their superpower is, because rugby really necessitates an incredible variety of athlete. Just the way the sport is played, you need big, powerful people. Everybody's got to be able to take a hit, but you need people with incredible bursting speed, just raw foot speed, lateral movement, hand-eye coordination. And even within the positions that require incredible power, You need different kinds of power and agility. So I often find it both not ironic and incredibly interesting that I had stumbled my way into a sport that literally has a place for every kind of athlete out there, which is why I think you can have so much fun playing and spectating the sport. There's somebody out there running around that looks just like you. I promise you that. So thanks for that wonderful tangent to start out our Wednesday show. But Gray, you had on your topic list for today something that I think very few people are aware that these things exist, and yet they have such an amazingly huge impact on how neighborhoods develop, where dollars get invested by governments in terms of infrastructure improvements. And these are the things that are called comprehensive plans. So, Gray, let's start with, what is a comprehensive plan, and why should people want to know if where they live and the community that they live in has a comprehensive plan?
Well, those are fantastic questions, Maggie, not least of which because they are answered with the same sentence. A comprehensive plan is the rational basis for the land use in your community. That's it. There are many flavors for how you can make those decisions and what those decisions could be, and each of them are going to vary as much as the places making them. But by and large, you've got some sort of community-based decision-making structure, and it's basically the goals for the land, whether that's an increase in tourism and how we can use the land to do that, or maybe we want to leverage this particular dam. You know, it's an open accounting of what's here in the area that we control and how can we use that best to benefit itself. Tourism is maybe one of the best examples. Cool, we want human beings to walk through this street we have. That's profitable it's self-evident. That profit is self-evident. It's a little more obscure when you're talking about the value of timber or the tourism that happens within the forestry community, which of course is seeing its own issues these days. But comprehensive plan, I'll admit, I wasn't as familiar as I should have been with comprehensive plans until I found out about what's going on with comprehensive plans in our own backyard. And a dirty, dirty word, extractive
land use. I just want to take a pause here to emphasize a few of the things that you've shared with everybody, Gray. That is, a comprehensive plan largely drives how zoning is determined, which determines whether or not you can put a certain type of business in a place. It determines what kind of development is permitted in different places, whether or not residential neighborhoods can expand, whether or not there might be a multifamily unit apartment building next to owned other single family homes. All of this stuff is baked into a comprehensive plan. And within that plan, not only can we think about business or residential zoning, but Gray, to your point, part of a comprehensive plan necessarily contemplates how do we grow and or maintain a local property tax base. And how is that going to work over time? Are we seeing growing populations or populations that are decreasing? Do we have enough housing? Except all of these considerations. Do we have enough green space? How are people recreating? How are they getting around? All of that stuff. Do we have a dog park nearby? All of those things are contemplated in a comprehensive plan. It has an outsized impact on what goes on in every single listener's, every single one of your neighborhoods. Now, Gray, you were telling me that there's a wee bit of controversy going on with Oneida County's comprehensive plan. Tell us more.
Forgive me for getting ahead of myself a little bit, because there's an extra degree or two under my collar about it, because these counties, so we're in Price County up here in Park Falls, and it's bordered by 8 other counties, each one of them extensively beautiful, naturally wooded areas, part of the Shawamigan National Forest. And the thing about forests is that they are the basis of basically the entire natural structure of the country, and they're also made of money. And that means that you'll have two groups of people with entirely different interests that are just as passionate about how that land is used. And I didn't know until very recently that the Northwoods of Wisconsin is attracting interest from people who haven't looked here before. There's eyes on the Northwoods that haven't been paying attention to us. And I think that's been a privilege that's about to end, at least from my perspective and from the perspective of people who want to protect the land more than profit on it. Not to knock him, but Tom Tiffany's been around, and of course he's around. He's a congressperson from the state. He has been working for a while with, for those who don't know about Tom Tiffany, his actually agricultural economics is, I believe, what his original degree is in. And he's done a lot of work with certain groups that focus on the growth of ranching and the use of land out west. But apparently he started to turn his sights a little back towards home, realizing that the same principles that have allowed him to turn land into profit out west might be the perfect way to turn our backyard into profit. Those things that haven't been touched, the things that have been sacred. And of course, the big kerfuffle a couple weeks ago was there was a little bit of a misattribution of info, which was that millions of acres of national forest are now going to be clear cut. Okay, no, there wasn't a plan in place, but there was the relaxation of the restrictions that stopped it. So that people were concerned was, well, there was some alarmism behind it, but it wasn't unfounded. And now here we are staring down the barrel of comprehensive plans now include more extractive land use, mining, logging, destructive use of land. I mean, it's undeniable that there is destruction that takes place. Yes, the act of cutting a tree is destructive, but I mean, the runoff from the machines and the gas that they use, okay, let's look at the other side of the coin. The local economy gets a boost when you do that. There's a reason that they're doing that. It's not just because, hey, we don't like these trees, let's cut them down so that Wisconsin has more view of the sky. Maybe Elon would like that because Starlink would come in better, but frankly, he doesn't need the help up here because there's no good internet, and that's an entirely separate issue. But that's it for me. We talked a couple months ago about that dam where I fish all the time. That's part of the area that is now being considered for use that has never even been considered before. The things that are sacred simply aren't, and I just don't know what that means. That's what scares me. What scares me is what I don't know about. And so when I'm afraid, I seek to educate myself, and I'm meeting walls. I'm meeting more walls, Maggie, than I've ever met in the process of educating myself.
Yes, when they're covering things up, when you can't find out information, it's always a red flag. We're going to talk about how to balance a bit these the interest in trying to create profit, grow tax bases, be a friendly environment for business, and each of our individual rights as human beings to increase our dignity, to explore our human dignity by being able to recreate in the natural resources that make Wisconsin so incredible. And what revenue is generated in the state of Wisconsin because we do have untouched wilderness and beautiful natural resources. The false choice here is real, everybody. We're going to dig in a little bit into that when we come back. I'm also going to introduce you to a concept in economics that every single one of us can grasp, and that is negative externalities. If you want to know what that is and how you can use it to have a more informed, nuanced debate about land use and comprehensive plans, stay tuned. It's nerdy, but it's important right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where every day I try to put my training and experience in both law and economics to work for you so that you can be as informed a consumer of public policy as you wish, so that you can be one of the people in your community that is best able to help others understand what's going on and who to hold accountable if you don't appreciate some of the decisions that are getting made. Now, I've had my great friend and colleague in broadcasting, Greg Gunderson, who comes to us from WRC up in up in Park Falls. My head is just getting mishmashed today. That's what happens when I take a day off because of the back problem. Comes to us from Oh my gosh.
WCQM.
WCQM in Park Falls. Thank you for the call letters, Gray. And we're talking about the controversy that's going on in Oneida County about their comprehensive plan. To be clear, here's what's happened. The Oneida County Planning Committee has approved changes to Oneida County's comprehensive plan. And these are changes that tend to favor business interests, specifically the timber industry. Many of these changes have allegedly been advocated for by a group called the American Stewards of Liberty. And again,
I love that name.
Right. I'm going to get to that in just a second, Gray, because, again, the changes in and of themselves are neither good nor bad. You have to ask the question, whose interests are being served?
Yep.
To wit, if you owned a house and your neighbor bought the plot next to you and said, I'm going to turn this into a toxic waste treatment plant, you might have something to say about that. It's an extreme example. And let's say that the toxic waste treatment plant next to you only charges, say, a quarter more per cubic liter or whatever it is of waste than does your typical waste management company. Okay? Bear with me here. Here's where we get into the concept of negative externalities. Perhaps that toxic waste company is only charging a quarter more per cubic liter because regulations don't require that toxic waste company to remediate the environmental impacts of disposing of toxic waste by burying it in the ground. Therefore, they have what an economist would call an artificially low price for their service. Here is how this relates to the debate going on in Oneida County. Logging, timber industry, not bad or good in and of itself, but as we slap on more tariffs to our trading partners in Canada, who has a lot more timber than we do, do you think there might be an enormous profit motive for a timber company to get more access to more timberland within here, our beautiful state of Wisconsin? Of course so. But does timber, does logging produce negative externalities? And does the jurisdiction or the state or the feds have appropriate regulations in place to remediate negative environmental impacts from that commercial activity? Stated simply, and I'm sorry I'm going on about this, Gray, but it is so important for people to understand. There's nothing, in essence, wrong about a commercial use of any plot of land, except where said commercial use harms other people's right to enjoy and use their property or creates environmental harms that everyone has to pay for or suffer the health consequences of. That's what a negative externality is, a thing that is not put into the price of the good or service that escapes pricing. And so it means effectively people, quote, overconsume or overpollute in the furtherance of their commercial activity. That's the debate that's going on right now in Oneida County. Is it good and for whom and to what extent for the comprehensive plan to change to benefit timber companies and potentially harm the overall environmental quality of those that live in Oneida County? Am I getting that mostly right to your understanding, Gray? I mean, that's at its root what the questions are.
100%. The way that I simplify it, because I desperately needed to when I was reading through this, marvelously, though you've said it, I found myself thinking of the concept of a tool. Pick any tool. How about a wrench? That is designed for a job. Is that good or bad? No, but if you swing it at somebody's head, that tool is now a weapon. And that's just it. Any tool can become a weapon based upon its use. So is this tool being used to just do the job that needs to be done? No, certainly not. So it's benefiting somebody, but is that me? Is that the land itself? Is it the generations to come? Or is it the people who Tom Tiffany thinks it can best be benefited by a sudden and large need for American-produced timber?
Yeah,
tell you what, you want to see if there's going to be an increased need? Why don't you check how many Congress people just invested in timber stocks?
Yeah, because we haven't made that illegal yet. Go ahead, Gray. How many?
No, not yet. I checked, and it's a significant number. The amount of Congress people currently investing in timber stocks within the last 2 months
Huge.
Just a random date range.
You know, imagine Massive. That. We got a great comment from our friend Dave in New Berlin who says sometimes clear cutting is necessary to prevent wildfires and forest fires. Yep. 100%. This is the analysis that needs to be done. My understanding of the changes to Oneida County's comprehensive plan have nothing to do with fire management, have everything to do with supporting industry and encouraging more clear cutting. But my point here very broadly is a particular zoning choice is neither good nor bad. As with everything, ask who benefits, who will pay the costs, are there negative externalities? What are there? Who's responsible for those negative externalities? Is it the consumer? Is it the neighbor next door if we're changing zoning and a comprehensive plan? And what are the other potential externalities that are positive? And here's what economists do. Here's what the economists who Oneida County could ask to help them analyze their comprehensive plan changes could do. Actually do a fiscal analysis of all of those things. And then present that. Do we have a net plus to the residents and taxpayers in Oneida County, or do we have a net negative? You could actually analyze who benefits across income stratas, residents versus businesses. You could break all of that down. Has Oneida County done that? I'm guessing probably not. That's usually not the way it works. Great. We've got so much to talk about, but we're out of time. You will be back next week with me, and we will continue these great discussions, sometimes about chicken nuggets, sometimes about comprehensive plans in Oneida County. Thank you, my friend.
Cross-country skiing, back spasms, nothing's off limits.
No, nothing at all. You're going to want to keep it locked right here. I got Dan Schaefer coming up for the State Slate on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you don't have to just listen. If you prefer to watch, Civic Media's got its own YouTube channel. Just search for Civic Media. You can watch me and all of my fine guests there. We also stream live on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Maggie Dawn Show. You can check out all my social posts there as well. If you prefer the professional version of Maggie, you can find me on LinkedIn under Margaret Dawn. And you can find my next guest's fabulous work on the Substack recombobulation area. There's a sale going on right now. We'll talk about that in a minute. As well as on Civic Media's website, civicmedia.us. His name is Dan Schaefer. You may better know him as the creator of the recombobulation area, here to help us every week recombobulate this week's news in state politics. Welcome back, Dan. Great to have you.
Joe.
Wonderful. Say that one more time so everybody can hear you, Dan. Nice to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me. Always wonderful to join you on the Maggie Dawn Show. We can get a little discombobulated at times, I guess.
But, yes.
We're always going to recombobulate here.
So I want to start out with something that all of the wonks and political pundits and political folks that I know here in the state of Wisconsin are talking about, and that is the next gubernatorial election cycle. We get done with one, and already everybody's talking about the next election. It seems to be that the common accepted thinking is that Governor Evers is likely going to run for a next term, though that could change. This leaves open the question of who the heck is going to run against Evers from the GOP side. I mention all of this because it seems, especially on the Democratic side, that there may be people willing to run a second time immediately after a loss. I'm thinking of Rebecca Cook, who's already said, yep, I'm running again. We're hearing rumblings or thinkings that that may be happening in a few other congressional districts because, especially on the House side, only 2-year cycles there. So, Dan, who's on the short list? Does it include Tim Michaels? Might he be on the short list? Gosh, help us.
I don't think we're going to see the Tim Michaels 2.0 campaign, but you're right. These conversations are beginning for the gubernatorial race. And there was some news that the Journal Sentinel reported this week. A guy by the name, Republican businessman by the name of Bill Berrien, who's a Navy SEAL veteran and the CEO of Pindell Global Precision and Liberty Precision in New Berlin, announced that he is launching his own PAC, which often means that he is going to be running for something. Now, no name recognition at all for this individual. No idea what exactly he would be bringing to the table. But I think this, if nothing else, starts the conversation for who's going to be running for governor on the Republican side. Like you mentioned, you know, Tony Evers seems likely to run again. We shall see. He's not going to be making that decision until after the budget process. So it's going to be interesting to see who jumps into the mix for the Republicans.
Indeed it will. I mean this very glibly, not in a serious way, but geez, I'm sure getting sick and tired of the multimillionaire set swooping in to run for elected office as if having a boatload of money somehow qualifies one to be an elected official. I'm not sure that those skill sets are necessarily always transferable, very person dependent. Seems like we're brewing up yet another potential billionaire candidate from the GOP side. Ho-hum. Here it goes again. Anybody else on the short list or that you're hearing rumblings about for the GOP side of the ticket, Dan?
Yeah, I've seen some stories going around with, you know, kind of in conservative media and whatever else. You know, I think a new favorite on the right is Sean Duffy. Because of his now prominent role in the Trump administration. He's on TV all the time. I think that would be a little bit surprising if he were to be, you know, the transportation secretary and then, you know, jump out of it to run for governor right away. I would be a little bit surprised by that. I've seen some talk that Eric Hovde might again run. You know, he's got his name out there. He came close to beating Tammy Baldwin. Would that, you know, put him into the mix for governor and Republican side, you know, remains to be seen. A couple other names that I've heard are Washington County Executive Josh Shulman. He has, you know, kind of raised his profile in a number of ways in recent years. That is one potential contender. And then I've also heard State Senator Patrick Teston, who's from central Wisconsin. I believe he's in leadership in the Republican State Senate. You know, but again, and Tom Tiffany, the Republican congressman from the Northwoods, you know, he will kind of do what you don't see a whole lot of from you know, people, members of Congress, which is weigh in on state issues. And I think, you know, the fact that you see him, you know, having comments on Tony Evers or what's happening in the state legislature seems to suggest he is at least to a certain extent plugged into what's going on in state politics. So he's another name to watch for the gubernatorial race as well.
Yeah, it is a fascinating time to watch these various approaches to, you know, like, what are the pro cons for them in terms of running? Is it just a pure who's the best situated to win calculus? And, you know, can people self-fund their campaigns, right? Or are they going to need the Elon Musk of it all help, which did not bode very well for dear old Brad Schimmel, who apparently is getting floated for a potential Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals seat or some other Article III judgeship. Because you know what I like to do with utterly unqualified partisans is put them into a lifetime appointment as a jurist in our federal court system. I'm sure that will have no negative impacts at all whatsoever. I wanted to also, Dan, ask you about if there have been more rumblings about what is in the near term going to be Wisconsin Dems picking who's going to lead the party here. Who's got their, we talked about one person who immediately threw their hat in the ring. Are there other candidates? And let's recap from last week. Who is definitely in the race and who is newly potentially going to join?
Yeah, so yeah, I joined the show last week right as the news was breaking, and we talked about Ben Wickler and all of that. We didn't get a chance to talk about who might be next. And Devin Remicker, who is part of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, he immediately launched his campaign. I have also seen that Glendale Mayor Brian Kennedy is going to throw his hat into the ring there, and as is William Garcia, who is the chair of the 3rd District Democrats in western Wisconsin. Also a lot of rumblings that Joe Zepecki, who is a strategist and a familiar voice on our airwaves here on the Civic Media Network, is considering throwing his hat into the ring as well. I've also heard some rumblings about State Senator Kelda Royce. Not exactly sure if she would be a candidate for that role right now, but I do understand that people have been asking her about that as she's been around the state for, you know, the Joint Finance Committee's listening sessions as well. So, you know, a number of names in the mix there. And Ben Wickler's term will end at the end of June or in mid-June when the state party has its convention in Wisconsin Dells. So, you know, that will be a big decision about the future of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin.
For those who like to, you know, hedge and prognosticate, do you think that there's a favorite right now, Dan?
I do think Remicker, you know, given the fact that he's been part of, you know, kind of the party's structure over the past few years, has worked under Ben Wickler, you know, that seems to be the way of, you know, kind of passing the torch to somebody who has been,
who knows,
you know, very
the
much
system.
Involved with that, yeah. Knows the system, would be kind of, you know, I don't think Wickler's going to, you know, come out and endorse anybody in this race, but I think Remicker might be looked at as an internal choice. But also, I think this is going to be an open race. And I think, you know, the candidates who have gotten into the mix, who are running for this role, you know, this is going to be a competition. You know, this isn't going to be an anointed candidate who's going to, you know, just be Wickler's handpicked successor. I don't think it's going to unfold that way. I think they want the members of the party to make that decision.
And a competition with consequence. I don't know Mr. Remicker personally at all, but I went to law school with Kelda Royce, spent a lot of time talking with her about politics and policy. I worked with Brian Kennedy in my former capacity as Milwaukee County's Corporation Counsel, a reasonable guy, a good faith actor by all accounts. And of course, we all know Joe Zepecki, who's a longtime political advisor, political consultant, helps run campaigns, knows what's up. What I get worried about with any one candidate is political strategy, fundraising, ground game that works in Dane and Milwaukee counties doesn't always work in different regions of the state. And familiarity therewith, and all of these people have familiarity across the state, but it's a question of how grassroots, how much experience, because again, mobilizing not just Dane and Milwaukee County, which is really step one, but those statewide races that we have to succeed in, or that Democrats feel like they have to succeed in, will require some outstate engagement, connection, and voters turning out. So it's a really interesting time for the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Watch this space. I'm sure we will have more coming from Dan and others as the race heats up. Something to watch for sure. I am going to be joined by your friend and my friend, Dan, and everybody who's listening. Jeremy Janine is going to join me in just a little bit. One of the things that we need to talk about is the lead problem, not just in Milwaukee public schools, but in schools that were built prior to, I believe it's 1978, across the state. I heard a statistic recently that it's some 40% or higher of all school buildings that kids are in this state are that old or older. So it's a huge, swath of buildings. This ain't just a Milwaukee public schools problem. But Dan, you shared with me some news that does not bode well for federal grant funding that helps support efforts to remediate lead poisoning and to help communities that are facing potential lead poisoning challenges. Tell us more, Dan.
Yeah, this some news that has broken over the past week or so here. The city of Milwaukee has found that the lead problem in Milwaukee schools, particularly with having to do with lead paint, is far more widespread than they initially realized. And the city officials made a formal request to the CDC for help in late March, and found not only that they would not be able to help, but that under the direction of the Trump administration and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as Health and Human Services Secretary, they are eliminating the agency's entire lead program. So it is not just Milwaukee that is going to be dealing with this when they, you know, find problems that are maybe beyond the scope of local level, that they can be dealt with at the local level. Federal help is just not going to be there for this. And I think this is a major, major problem. And I think it is going to be incumbent on state leaders and local leaders to step up and do something in the wake of this, because help from the feds is not coming. It is not going to come from the Trump administration.
This is one of those head scratchers, Dan, that I cannot get this to make sense to me at all. The response from the CDC, it came from Aaron Bernstein, the director of the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is a sub-department of the CDC, wrote to the city of Milwaukee and said, "I regret to inform you that due to the complete loss of our lead program, we will be unable to support you with this." Who on God's green earth benefits from the federal government's taxpayer-funded CDC lead poisoning response team being shut down? I like, that just is such an abomination. Government at its most basic, boiled down to the simplest things, uses taxpayer dollars to help support the public's health and welfare. That is the purpose of government. Now, we do that through all kinds of different things, right? But this, where kids are neurologically compromised for life from lead poisoning, that's what's on the cutting block under RFK and Donald Trump's pen? Unacceptable. Get on the phones, people. Call your state leaders. Call Tom Tiffany and tell him that's no good. We want our support from the CDC for lead poisoning back and fully funded. Thanks so much, Dan Schaefer. Always enjoy recombobulating with you on Wednesdays. You're going to want to keep it locked. We're going to take a short little amount of time for some messages and be back with Jeremy Janine. The lead conversation continues next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined from Milwaukee as a microcosm, because as goes Milwaukee, so goes the state, by Jeremy Janine, creator and writer for Urban Milwaukee. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy. You wanted to talk about one of the same things that Dan Schaefer wanted to talk about from the state slate, which shows you how important this is, not just for Milwaukee public schools, but for the entire state and nation. Jeremy, tell us more about your reporting from Urban Milwaukee about this and why this is so, frankly, shocking.
The thing that really shocks me is that yesterday I was in a press conference with Milwaukee Health Commissioner Michael Tortiardis, and the question was, well, who are you supposed to call at the Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control, for help on an issue like this? And he said, I don't know. The entire lead team has been eliminated. We can assume if we started making calls about PFAS or other things, those teams have likely been eliminated. 10,000 employees being fired at the Department of Health and Human Services. We're already seeing the impacts of what a cut like that can bring. And this is, I think, a perfect Milwaukee's microcosm topic. Milwaukee has this issue. It's going to rear its head, probably not for lead, probably for some other issue, but all across the state whenever there's some type of public health need.
Yeah, it's the irresponsibility and, frankly, the callousness and cruelty is breathtaking. And here is the rub, Jeremy. I want to get your take on this. Again, in my opinion, from my vantage point, when you look at the communities that will pay the highest price for these kinds of cuts, it's not places like Milwaukee. It's not the city of Racine. It's not the city of Green Bay. It's not Madison. It's not even places maybe like Wausau. It is the smallest communities that do not have within their local governments the capacity at all to respond to public health crises or to these kinds of outbreaks. The people that the communities that are so small in more rural, more less populated areas do not have the capacity to respond at scale if these things happen. Whereas, gee whiz, at least the city of Milwaukee has a robust health department with people that are trying to respond to this. I get extraordinarily worried about the impact, frankly, on more red-leaning counties, more rural counties, more red-leaning states that already, by almost any metric, have poorer health outcomes than some blue-leaning counties. It seems to sort of it seems to me that the Trump administration is sort of thumbing their nose at people at greatest risk who, frankly, were some of their core voters in the last cycle. Your thoughts on the fact that the implications, the impacts of cuts like these, the complete gutting of the lead poisoning response team at the CDC, other things that were gutted according to a memo just released, part of other sweeping layoffs, including cruise ship outbreak investigations. That team has been completely let go. Also on natural disaster response within the CDC, that's gone. And these are all related to helping local public health officials respond to these kinds of disasters. Expertise related to radiological and nuclear threats has been eliminated out of the CDC. Am I wrong that, you know, yeah, Milwaukee's going to feel it, but so is every other county in this state?
I think you're right. You're hitting it on the nose with it's going to be worse in smaller communities. And it's important to look at what the Milwaukee officials were asking of the federal officials. They weren't asking the federal officials to come paint, to do the basic blocking and tackling and fixing the problem. They were saying, this is going to get very complicated. We're going to get data from hundreds and hundreds of kids. And we need your expertise as federal leaders who spend your entire career focused on lead poisoning to look at this complicated data, to design strategies for testing hundreds of kids. They weren't asking for just give us money to help fix the issue. No, that unfortunately is an issue that's falling on Milwaukee Public Schools, but they were asking for guidance, big picture strategies on how do we resolve this most effectively? How do we really completely address this? I think we're gonna see that very problem creep up on all kinds of other things where the technical expertise is just now completely absent.
And this is where I wanted to put some emphasis this afternoon, Jeremy. It bears repeating. What they were asking for was technical data analysis assistance. How do you triage this? How do you make sure that you're addressing the schools of greatest risk? Like limited resources, limited staff, we have to figure out how to triage this. Good data analysis is the backbone of good public policy. And if they don't have the right data scientists, which many local health departments, even in a place like Milwaukee, which is big, don't have that capacity, don't know exactly how to splice and dice the data correctly or in a best practices way. And as a data scientist myself, as an economist, you don't do the analysis right, you're going to get a bunch of garbage results that actually might harm, from a public policy or decision-making standpoint, might make an outbreak or a problem like this worse, which is absolutely stunning. Here's a few other areas of the CDC completely blacklined. Cancer cluster investigations, chemical weapons demolitions, toxic substance spills. These are issues in the state. We've had pipeline disasters. Where are local health departments going to go to help analyze how to help people? It ain't the feds anymore, courtesy of RFK Jr. and Donald Trump. Jeremy, thank you for being a partner in our continuing discussion about these cuts and the lead situation in MPS. You'll be back next week with me, I'm sure.
See you next week.
Thank you, Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee, for this segment we call Milwaukee as a Microcosm. As goes Milwaukee, so goes the state. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the latest on Mr. Abrego Garcia and the Trump administration thumbing its nose at the federal courts. Our discussion continues on the other side on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.